Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Cause you had a bad day, you're taking one down. You sing a sad song just to turn it around. You say you don't know, you tell me don't lie. You work at a smile and you go for a ride. You had a bad day, the camera don't lie. You're coming back down and you really don't mind. You had a bad day. Oh, you had a bad day. Yo.
What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. We didn't have a bad day necessarily today, but we've had bad days in the past because sometimes people play commanders that are the worst commanders to play against.
Just the worst.
Yeah.
Thanks for nothing.
Yes. You know them. Those legendary creatures that, you know, as soon as they flip them over, like, this is what I'm playing this game. Everyone was like, this is going to suck.
And every you're kind of like looking at, you're like, well, this is my fun jank deck. Yeah. Maybe I should. But I just shuffled and drew my...
I guess we're doing this.
I guess we are. Well, look, we're going to be talking about a lot of worst commanders today. Not necessarily worst in power level. And you might be a meme player, or you might be someone that wants to get back at those meme players.
There you go.
And so if you want to get some cards to help you do that, make sure you head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. That's what you type into your browser if you want to support this show, support your playgroup, support your deck in defeating these monsters. And of course, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That directly does help us make the content that you love every single day for all your singles, sealed products, and more. Check that out. All you have to do is type the link in and you're good to go.
And when you do get these cards you're ordering right now, you know, you don't have to buy the worst commanders that we're about to list. You might be pre-ordering Ikoria stuff, commander product right around the corner. You might still be buying Theros stuff or anything at all. You really do want to keep all that stuff safe because our cards are valuable. Mm-hmm. We want them to look good. If you're like Jimmy, you bling out all your decks. And the best way to keep all that stuff safe is by using products from Ultra Pro. They really do make the best sleeves in the business. They're going to make sure that your cards stay in pristine condition. They also make awesome playmats.
Yep.
You always want to play on a playmat if you can, just to keep the cards from getting dirty, scuffed up, things like that. They make amazing deck boxes. We always talk about things like the Satin Towers, which are just hard and compact, and like your cards are very, very safe in those. And that's one of the things I'm looking for in those types of products. I want my stuff to feel safe, and Ultra Pro makes the best stuff to protect your stuff.
Not to mention the playmat is great at organizing your play space.
Yeah,
so that you
true.
Keep everything in one area so that you can just see how badly you're losing to these worst commanders. Okay, and the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. Our patrons are awesome. We talk to them every day on Discord answering questions, and the community there has been growing and growing and growing, and it's tons of awesome people. So make sure you check out the Patreon, and we shout out one lucky patron every single day. And this episode is dedicated to
Gwen Wolf. Gwen,
you
definitely rock. Hey there, little Red Riding Hood. All right.
What, two songs, one show? Whoa! Slow down.
Before we get into the main topic here, we want to give a quick shout out to the EDH Rec Cast, which is a podcast from the people who make the website EDH Rec, which is the best website for it's straight up the best website for deck building for the commander format.
I use it at least 2-3 times a day.
Yeah, every single day for sure we use it. And they have a podcast, Joey Matt and Dana are the hosts, and we have recently taken over the post-production side for their podcast. So if you go over and check them out, it's really easy to find on YouTube. Just type in EDH Rec Cast or on any of your podcast apps. You're going to see that they've gotten a recent makeover. Their show looks really, really good.
That intro sequence. Ooh, with the things rising to become the logo. Ooh. It's amazing.
Yeah, so it's been fun to work on their show. They do really awesome content. We definitely would not have agreed to do this if we didn't think that their show was great. And I learned something all the time from their show. So EDH RecCast, go check them out, see their new makeover, and give them a sub. I think they definitely deserve it.
Let them know we sent you. Okay. Worst commanders to play against. We emailed everyone at the office and asked everyone, hey, what do you think are the worst commanders to play against? And keep in mind, we're not saying worst commanders as in least powerful.
Most powerful.
Most powerful, or worst as in they're bad. We're saying worst as in it just is not necessarily going to be a great time for you across the table because you are fighting against the odds because they're so powerful or so whatever it is, oppressive, that it's tough.
Yeah, I think most people didn't gravitate towards the most powerful CEDH decks, right? Like somebody comboing you out on turn three. Listen, that's not the worst experience you're going to have in Commander. Because the game's over, you shuffle up, you play again. So this is not going to be a list of like the top CEDH decks. Obviously, some will make it. It's mostly those decks that's just like, this is going to be a slog, or this is going to suck, or a lot of other reasons that don't necessarily exactly correlate with how powerful the deck is. I mean, a lot of these decks obviously can be and are quite powerful, but I don't want people to conflate those terms. They're not synonymous. Powerful and worst. There's a difference there.
Yeah, worst is also, I think when you hear the word, you're like, oh, they're going to be dissing on commanders or insulting them. No. We're here to almost glorify how worst they are.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. There are some of these that I do not like playing against that much. Like,
nope.
One thing I'd say is like, once a night, one of these is fine.
Yeah.
But if it was like every game, I'd be like, okay, this is not super fun.
A lot of times, worst also is synonymous with type of deck, and we'll get into that as well as we get deeper into the discussion.
Okay, these are in no particular order. We're not listing them. There's 10 total, because that's a nice round number, but we're not listing them like the first one we talk about is the worst, and the last one is the 10th worst.
The least worstest.
Yeah, they're all bad. Okay. All right, number one, it does happen to be a CEDH deck, though.
Yes.
It is Urza, Lord High Artificer, one of our past preview cards. It's 2 blue-blue for a 1/4 human artificer, legendary of course. When Urza enters the battlefield, you create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. So it's always a 1/1.
Yep.
It's usually much bigger because you have more artifacts out. It also says tap an untapped artifact you control to add blue to your mana pool.
What?
And it doesn't give the artifact the ability to tap. That's like a zombie. It taps it as a downside. So you can tap the construct the turn that Urza comes into play for the blue, not to mention like any other low casting cost artifacts that you already may have put out on the battlefield. And then also, because that's not enough, Urza has an activated ability. You pay 5:, so as many times as you have 5 generic mana, you can do this. Shuffle your library, then exile the top card. Until end of turn, you may play that card without paying its mana cost. So it has card draw and ramp on it. It turns all your artifacts into mana rocks. And also, it provides you with an outlet to spend all that mana by revealing cards off the top of your deck and then allowing you to cast them for free, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Urza is just the entire package. And you know what? I think all that stuff that we just read, very powerful, harkens to Thrasios and things like that. But that's not actually the reason that Urza is one of the worst commanders to play against.
Yeah, there is just a lot that happens with mono blue decks that often lead to a experience that people don't necessarily love. So a lot of mono blue decks can be built around just full control. And you have all of the tutors in the world in blue to find those control elements. So Urza can also play in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's one card, and maybe if this card didn't exist, Urza would be like 70% as annoying as it is, and it's Winter Orb.
Yaha.
So Winter Orb, Winter Orb is an artifact that only allows players to untap one land each turn. The thing is, the thing is, and I think a lot of people don't know this because different versions of the card don't have this text, but it got errated or it got clarified.
Adjusted, yeah.
Yeah. In that, if that effect only happens if Winter Orb is untapped.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, if you can tap Winter Orb somehow on the end step before your turn, then on your turn, you're the owner of the Winter Orb. During your untap step, it's tapped, so it doesn't have an effect, so you can untap all your stuff. Thing is, Urza gives you the ability to tap the Winter Orb for mana. So that one card makes it super oppressive because nobody else untaps except for the Urza player.
Yeah, they only get one land and you have full control over that land. And so your dreams of getting rid of this card or doing anything on your turn, it's sort of like when you tap mana out with a Vorinclex out.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's not untapping anytime soon. But in the Winter Orb case, you, as the player that has the Winter Orb, gets full control of your mana and everyone else is locked down except for one land each turn. So it just really creates an almost stasis-like lock immediately, depending on and how soon you get Urza out. And you can power Urza out because you're a deck that's built around artifacts already.
And Urza, like you said, is in blue. Blue has a lot of permission elements. That's what we call counterspells and things like that. So what happens is you save up enough mana over a couple of turns with the Winter Orb out if they haven't won already. You're finally like, okay, now I can try and kill that thing, and they go counter that.
Yeah.
Because they have all their mana every turn, so they're just like... Yeah.
And they have extra mana. It's not unlikely for someone to play Urza and have activations ready for the five mana. So those things combined together make Urza a worst commander to play against. It's one of those times where, I mean, very rarely does someone play a commander and you just go, oh, that might be it.
Yeah.
That might be the last time I'm ever able to interact with that card or that board.
Or I cast anything for the rest of this game, not just because I'm going to die. It's still going to go on four turns, but I just won't have any mana. I think a lot of people out there maybe are saying, well, it's one card, Josh. It's just an artifact in the deck. But the problem is that blue, mono blue specifically, has all the tutors to find artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
There's the War of Inventions, and there's the Fabricates, and there's a whole bunch of them, and the Reshapes, and all kinds of different ways to get an artifact into play. So Urza deck is going to be able to get Winter Orb most games. I mean, never mind, they often are built with the combos of like Infinite Mana, Basalt, Monolith, Rings of Bright Hearth,
right?
Those types of things. I don't mind those so much because they generally just win.
Yeah, they'll get there the turn that it happens, so you don't need to sit and just sort of drearily untap
one land, go
pass. I'm gonna swing at you with everything, but you just block with your little 6/6 artifact creature tokens now.
Okay, well, Urza. We don't need to talk about Urza anymore. It is one of the worst commanders to play against. For sure.
All right, next up is a newer card and one that was featured on Game Nights actually very recently. It's Korvold, Fey Cursed King. And I find that these worst cards often have a lot of text on them, Josh.
Yeah. Maybe that's a clue as to what might be a worst card, is if it's just covered in text.
Death by Options. All right, it's 2 black, a red, and a green for a 4/4 legendary creature, dragon, noble with flying. Whenever Korvold enters the battlefield or attacks, sacrifice another permanent. And whenever you sacrifice a permanent, put a +1/+1 counter on Korvold and draw a card.
So it has this value engine-y thing built in. I think the problem with... Because again, I think more so than Urza. Urza you look at, and in our preview card episode, we were like, this thing's busted.
Nuts. Yeah, straight busted.
Korvold just is like, this thing's good. And I think Korvold, while you can build it very powerful, I'm not sure if it's a full-on 10 out of 10 CEDH deck for Korvold. But
five mana for the commander might
be. You can definitely build it up to like a 9 or something. I've seen very good ones. But again, the reason that Korvold is one of the worst commanders to play against is not the power level. It's just the play pattern.
Yeah.
Korvold decks just... I mean, and I'm not blaming the players, because Korvold encourages you to build a deck in a specific way. And usually your turn goes like this. Okay, I cast this, I sacrifice that, that causes me to draw a card. And then I sacrifice this, that causes me to draw a card. And then I cast this, which brings back this
and
sacrifice that, and I draw a card for that. And then
it's also like, oh, and everyone take one damage, I gain one. Okay, everyone adjust your life totals. All right, next up I'm going to do, it's like, oh my goodness.
And it just tends to happen that Korvold decks cause the three players to watch the one player for a long time, most turns.
Mm-hmm.
And...
I mean, we kind of did that in the Game Nights episode with Reed, because he's obviously going to pilot this deck masterfully, and he's going to make the most of each turn.
And it was a Brawl deck, so he didn't even have the option of all the cards we do in Commander, which can just make these loops. And I think it's also confounded by the fact that a lot of that stuff is not quickly advancing that player towards a win. It's a lot of wheel spinning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of like, draw a card, sack this, do this, little bit of damage, maybe if you're lucky. I almost prefer it when they have a Blood Artist or something out, because at least it's then like, okay, we're dying while this is happening.
Things are going on. Thank you.
Yeah, sometimes all that's happening and nobody's taking any damage, and you're just like, you're cycling through your deck looking for pieces or whatever, and it takes a long time. There's no point at which I'm like, draw 27 cards. It's like, draw one at a time.
Yeah.
Look at it. Play this. Do that.
Each
draw
time,
another one.
And you have like 6 triggers to keep track of. It's the reason that people complain about cards like Sensei's Divining Top, because it's like, this is going to take forever. Korvold also has cards like Gitrog Monster in there, and then Gitrog, if you've ever played against a Gitrog Monster deck, you just know what happens. It's like, and this, and this, and this, and it's like, all right, cool.
And then I discard that, which caused me to do this,
dancing on your own board right now.
Yeah, and again, I don't blame the players playing these things, because it is fun, but it just naturally turns into a game of solitaire a little bit. And it's That's just the way the card encourages you to design those decks. It's very hard to get out of. We played a game like last week. We had a game night, and Lady Danger here, she had built like a new Korval deck.
Mm-hmm.
And her deck is like, she just brewed it up and used the cards we had around the office and put it together. And so it wasn't like the highest power level Korval deck. She had this whole list of cards like she wished she had that she was going to get and build the deck. And her deck wasn't full on like this, but you could even see it then that it was like, I thought it was fine. Like it wasn't getting to the point where we were like waiting 15 minutes, but I was like, even the, like, I just threw it together in a couple of hours. Korval deck was starting to do this thing. And you can imagine if you spend 2 days brewing
full
on it.
Full tuned one. Yeah. I mean, sometimes having so many options too, you get into these positions where someone goes like, well, I need to figure out how to order this before I even start my turn.
Oh, that's a really good point.
And then they're just sitting there looking at it and you're like, okay. And then once they start, they're like, wait, should I do this now? Oh, I drew this card. Then it changes my sequence. Like, oh, my goodness, it's actually begun.
That's a really good point, because a lot of times it's not even how we said it. Like, I do this, I do that, I draw a card, I do this. A lot of times it's, I do this. Okay, hold on.
Well, this has Life from the Loam graveyard.
So I'm going to play this first, and then I'll draw a card, and then, oh, that changes what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And so
you know what? Next time I'm going to dredge instead. So I'm going to do, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of decision points and a lot of thinking. So, yeah. All right, Korvald.
Maybe Korvald Get players are just smarter than the rest of us.
All right, the next one you have to read, Jimmy, because...
I do. It's a deck I've always promised to build, and after playing it on Game Nights, I've decided to probably not build it. It's Send Triplets. 2WB for a 3/3. At the beginning of your upkeep, choose target opponent. This turn, that player can't play spells or activate abilities and plays with his or her hand revealed. You can play cards from that player's hand this turn. Wow.
This is a card, when you read it, I don't think it really reads as something that's going to be that bad at all. But then when you play against it one time, you're like, oh, I hate playing against that.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Please don't do that to me ever again.
Yeah.
I feel bad for DJ, because it's happened a couple of times now where I've just, well, I mean, that whole game was just me being like,
hey, playing DJ's
deck. DJ, I like your deck. It's it's got a lot of powerful things in it. Yeah, Send Triplets, we talked about this on the show too, but it does one thing very well, which is it not just like control, it kind of mindslavers their turn a little bit, basically,
but
it's not even their turn. They can't do things in response, and you're drawing their entire hand for that turn with this commander, and you're playing their hand, so it's card advantage for you and disadvantage for not every player, but just one player, and that's what makes it the worst to play against.
Yeah, I think that's the part that is hard to understand when you read the card, because it seems fine, is the fact that you play a card out of their hand. Not only did you get a card, they lost a card. And so whoever you choose, you take the gas out of their hand, and now they're not playing Magic the same as everybody else. You kind of like...
just one play.
Like, imagine if this card said, look at the top four cards of target player's library, and you could do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, that's not cards out of their hand. You're playing their deck. It would have sort of a similar effect that in spirit, I think this is what they wanted.
Yeah.
But that player can still formulate plans with what they've got in their hand and try to counter you. But like, if that player has a removal spell to get rid of Send Triplets, you just cast the removal spell, and now, and everybody's seen their hand and knows everything they've got.
Yeah.
And it just ends up being like very unfun for the player that gets chosen. And then you choose a different player. So it's then it's just like everyone.
When the turn rolls around, you're like, man, I really hope it's one of those times you're like, I want to have like two cards in my hand so they don't choose me. Choose the guy with the biggest
with
deck,
the biggest hand,
the biggest hand, the biggest ability to draw cards. Choose them, please.
I think also what happens with Send Triplets deck a lot is that nobody wants that to happen to them. And so Send Triplets just gets removed every time.
Right.
Which then creates a game that's not fun for the player playing Send Triplets, because you have two options, two paths that this game is going to go down. Either Send Triplets is going to happen and you're going to cause another player to just not have any fun for a game, or Send Triplets is going to get removed every time you cast it, in which case the Send Triplets player is just not going to have fun for that whole game. And so I don't think there's really like a real fun way to be playing Send Triplets.
It's not one of those ones where you're like, hey, I built a five-color Kenrith deck.
Yeah.
But this one's all about group hug. I'm like, I believe that. You can't play like, I play the Send Triplets deck. It's a nice deck. It's like,
yeah, it's Soldier just, Tribal, really?
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Look at your commander.
If you cast it, you don't need anything else.
Yeah.
It's going to be not fun for somebody. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I don't want to talk about these next few ones.
Okay, so the next worst commanders to play against are sort of a grouping. So there's a few cards. I'm not going to read all of them, but you'll get the idea. So the first one's Gaddock Teague.
Ugh.
The second one is Hikori Dust Drinker.
Ugh.
Grand Arbiter Augustine the Fourth is the third one. Derevi, Imperial Tactician. There's more, I think, on the list that we could go down. Gaddock Teague makes it difficult to cast non-creature spells. Impossible to cast large non-creature spells. Mm. Hikori Dust Drinker is sort of like Winter Orb. Doesn't let lands untap. Grand Arbiter makes spells cost more mana, so harder for your opponents to cast spells. And then Derevi doesn't actually inherently say anything about stacks, but tends to be built in a stacks type deck, which is a decks that have things like Winter Orb, Static Orb, make it difficult for your opponents or maybe all players to untap and have all their resources available because of the way Derevi works. Allows you to untap things in another way.
And you have access to three colors. All these other ones are two colors or one. So I think that's actually a really important part of Derevi too.
So stacks commanders, these are the ones that as soon as they flip them over, I'm going to play this. You know, okay, so this game, it will be difficult for me to play my cards and cast my spells.
Because you don't build a deck with the stacks commander in mind. You build a deck with your commander in mind. So when Gaddak Teeg comes out and all of a sudden you are in big red deck with X spells, sorry, your game is over. Even your best removal spells can't get rid of this little 2/2.
Gaddak Teeg's no board wipes work.
Yeah.
I use him in a lot of decks in the 99 as like a board wipe stopper. So once your board gets big enough, play Gaddak Teeg and you're like, okay, now only Toxic Delusion, a couple other ones get out from under that. So you're going to have to singly remove things.
Gaddak Teeg has at times too just been the single thing that stops me from winning the game.
Yeah, for sure.
And Void Winterer has a very similar effect too. Yeah, I would say that these are, for me personally, the least favorite cards to play against because... You know, send triplets, you might dodge it. You might be able to remove it. But a Hate Bear deck like Gaddak Teeg is running multiple versions of cards that all do the same thing.
Yeah, stacks is very tough. And draws games out. That's naturally what they're trying to do. Slow everything down, make it so that instead of casting your spell every turn, you have to save up your mana because you can't untap. Yeah. So you're casting one spell every three turns. And think about how much longer that makes games.
Yeah, it's a game length thing. Not just oh, darn, I wish I could play more. But this game's going to take longer and you're going to play less.
Yeah.
That's maybe the two worst things you could tell a commander player. Hey, you want to play a commander game where you're going to play for twice as long, but you have as many things?
Yeah. No, I don't, actually.
Wait, why would you even ask that question? Coincidentally, Craig, by the way, has built like four of these decks that we've already talked about. So
I mean,
far
to be fair, Craig has built like a lot of commander decks in his time. So at some point he's had most commanders, like he's tried them out.
When you've seen it all, you come to the point where you're like, I need to beat it all as well. And so you make a Grand Arbiter deck and realize that it's just not fun to play against.
All right. The next one is, we're going to name a specific deck. It's also kind of a class of decks too, though.
Yeah. And it's also in a similar color pairing as another one of our decks. It's Lord Windgrace, a boxed commander.
Yeah.
Didn't expect the pre-con commander would make this list, but this one did. It's a planeswalker. It's 2, a black, red, and a green for a 5 loyalty planeswalker. Is +2 is discard a card, then draw a card. If it's a land card, if a land card was discarded this way, draw an additional card. So it's +2, draw two cards potentially. -3, return up to 2 target land cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. And -11, destroy up to 6 target non-land permanents, then create 6 2/2 green cat warrior creature tokens with Forest Walk. And of course, Lord Windgrace can be your commander.
The ultimate is not part of this discussion. I've literally never seen ultimate Lord Windgrace. The first two abilities, though, have to do with... It's now an archetype of deck, right? It's the lands in play, lands in your graveyard, that interaction, like... playing that loop-de-loop.
Yeah, also lands, generally the one thing that people cannot target in EDH, or don't want to.
I think that's actually the reason why this deck's annoying to play against. So Lord Windgrace is going to just fiddle around with putting lands in play in the graveyard and back and forth. Similar to Gitrog, another card that we've mentioned earlier too. And actually, I think similar to Korvald, which is a lot of wheel spinning for value, but none of that feels like it's actually advancing much towards a win. So it's wheel spin. Everybody watch. Not a lot actually happened to people's life totals or anything. And then the other thing you said, I think, is also very true. It does feel like these types of decks, the Lord Windgraces, Gitrog, I'll put in that same. The decks that care about like getting a lot of lands into play or to and from the graveyard, they do feel like they're taking advantage of the social contract. Because... the ways you would stop or combat these decks are cards that we kind of don't like to play. The Armageddons and the land destruction stuff or things that mess around with other people's lands. These are decks based around lands. And yet, those aren't tools in our toolbox that we're willing to pull out because...
We'd rather have our single target removal be a Path to Exile. not a path to land.
And people get mad if you're going to Armageddon and things like that. And you don't know in any given game if you're going to be playing against one of these types of decks. So you don't want to build your deck with cards that, like, if you're not playing against that type of deck, are looked at as mean or you're a jerk or whatever.
Yeah, generally, we would recommend never build a deck to specifically beat other kinds of decks unless it's a very meta choice. Like, I'm not going to be putting Armageddon in my decks because I know I'll be playing a Gitrog or whatever deck. And even then, those cards are not that great against them because they have recursion.
Yeah.
Lands are just one of the things that you don't cast them, you play them. They're cards that are really hard to interact with in general because they don't use the stack when they enter the battlefield. So it's very, very hard, I think, just to deal with land-based decks because the value is so much, I don't know, not stronger necessarily, but it's more everlasting than your other kind of value engines.
It's just a permanent type we don't mess with. In casual Magic, I think probably the best way to win is to get the most lands into play because you're just going to have more you can do than everybody else. And while, yes, getting a bunch of mana rocks will effectively, you know, quote unquote, do the same thing, it doesn't actually, because people will play Vandal Blasts and they will remove all the artifacts, but they rarely will just equalize the amount of lands on the table. And so it's just not punished.
Something I think players may not understand is that a lot of VDH decks run like 37 to 38 lands.
Right.
Lord Windgrace, Gitrog monster type decks run 45, 50, and you might say like, oh, that makes the deck weaker. They have less cards to do cool things with. It's like, that's the opposite. The fact that they're running more lands is something you should be afraid of because they're using these lands to gain an insane amount of value, more than the cards that they could have added in those slots.
Yeah, really good points. All right, we've got five more of the worst commanders to play against coming up, but before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we are five commanders down, and we have five to go. And this next one is I have a Child of Alara deck. I just spoiled it. It's Child of Alara.
I had a Child of Alara deck, but it's taken apart now. So we both tried this.
We both tried it.
We realized how mean it was.
Yeah, it's mean because it's a lot.
Okay, yeah, let me read it. It costs Wooburg, so one of each color mana, white, blue, black, red, and green, for a 6/6 legendary creature avatar has trample, but it says when Child of Alara dies, destroy all non-land permanents. They can't be regenerated. Now, we should note here that it can't, when it says when something dies, you have to put it in the graveyard. You can't put it back in the command zone.
Mm-hmm.
This is a five-color deck, usually not a big problem for it if it's built around Child of Alara. What you usually run into is they are going to wipe all non-land permanents off the board every single turn or multiple times in a turn. They're going to just endlessly recur this thing. Yeah, and that'll be part of their game plan.
You have five colors. Yep. You have black. You have many ways to get Child of Lar back on the battlefield.
Just endless recursion is not hard for, black, green, white even.
It's also one of those things where it's like, hey, we really have to board wipe right now. It's like, yeah, but that guy's Child of Lar out. I don't want to do that when that's out, because then everything blows up. It's like, well, we have to get rid of Megan. She's being a huge issue with all this stuff. It's like, yeah, but
Child of Lar. I lose all my rocks, all my enchantments. Yeah, like,
and everyone loses everything. Not to mention, like, let's look at the art for a second. No hate to the artist and the art direction. But it's a baby screaming out.
It's like a Tron giant, baby.
I don't know. It's like a giant celestial baby, like breaching the ground.
Is it giant? We don't have anything for scale. It could be teeny tiny.
Yeah, but how is it blowing up all the non-land permanents? Either way,
that's a good point. That's a good point.
You had a Child of Lar deck. I thought your design was actually really great.
Yeah, I had a Marchesa. It was a Child of Lar deck, but Marchesa was like the hidden commander in it. And the idea was to get to a situation where you get a +1/+1 counter on Child of Lar and you sack it, but all your other stuff has +1/+1 counters, so Marchesa brings everything back. And if you have like graft creatures and other things, you can then, when they come back onto play, redistribute the +1/+1 counters and get into that situation I was talking about where anytime you want to, wipe the board and it all comes back for you but not for everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it works sometimes, not all the time, but I realized when it worked, that wasn't very fun.
Yeah, the game was just, everyone's just like, cool. All right, what's next?
Yeah, I'll play stuff, I guess, but then it's just going to blow up, so...
Yeah, the first time it happens, they're like, wait, why is Child of Lar back on the battlefield? Yeah. It's like, oh, that Marchesa's here, and then the green helped me tutor out everything and also get the +1/+1 counters and everything. That's why Marchesa doesn't have green, because it would be broken, but now she does.
Because it's in a five-color deck.
Sorry.
Yeah, so... And everyone's just like, oh. Yeah.
So that's how this is going to go.
Yeah. Should we wait until he blows it up five more times, or should we just concede now?
Yeah, it's like,
but the thing is, you're not, that win is not like fast. So there, you kind of feel like, maybe we can get out from it. Let's see what we draw. Like, you kind of have to keep going, which sucks because the chances of you actually coming out from under are very small.
Well, it's also like, do you have a chance to play Bajuka Bog? Nope.
Okay.
The way it works is it's end steps, and it's you don't even have that much chance to like exile their graveyard or get it out. And it's even bad for you when someone gets rid of Marchesa or exiles her. It's like, oh, that's my game plan.
Yeah, that's true.
My whole deck was kind of built around this thing. And so, yeah, Child of Lar, very powerful commander. But if you had to choose a random five-color commander, just go with Kenrith, please.
Well, I don't know. Kenrith is so powerful, too. It's a tier one deck, so I would go with,
at least you can argue that Kenrith,
go with Chromat.
Chromat, yeah.
No one's definitely scared of Chromat. I promise.
Yeah, true. I would be. I'm still not scared of Chromat. Every time you play a Chromat deck and you play Chromat, I'm like, Josh is in a bad position.
Yeah,
this
if
is
you
happening.
Had to cast that.
Yeah.
All right. The next one is actually two. This is again a grouping of commanders. It's Talrand Sky Summoner and Mizzix of the Ismagus. Talrand is a 2 blue for a 2/2, and whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you get a 2/2 flying Drake. And Mizzix is 2 blue and a red for a 2/2. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell with converted mana cost greater than the number of experience counters you have, you get an experience counter, and then instant and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 less to cast for each experience counter you have. So eventually, Mizzix makes it so that your instants and sorceries are just like discounted by like 12 mana, and you can just kind of do whatever you want constantly.
Draw 12 cards, dome you for 12, do this, do that.
Yeah.
And it costs me almost nothing.
I think the problem here is that this grouping, and we could throw like Baral and a few others, I think, in the same category, which is permission style decks.
Yep.
Decks that, regardless of what all their text says, like one makes Drakes, the other one casts instants and sorceries. What they actually do is just counter every spell that everyone tries to cast.
Yeah, or do something where they completely mess up someone else's plans by forking something 6 times and then boom, oh, you accidentally just blew up half the board, including your own.
Yeah.
Narset's
Reversal in both of these.
Yeah.
And like fork it 3 times and just, yeah.
And back when experience counters came out, maybe you put a few cards in there to deal with them. But at this point, no one is running like, I got to make sure my deck can deal with experience counters.
And there's very few cards in the history of Magic that can even do it. Like Sun Cleanser was like the only one that came to mind for me. So experience counters are very hard to interact with. So that makes Mizzix annoying on a whole nother level.
Yeah, that's why all of the experience counter commanders can be really tough to deal with, like Marin as well. It's just once they're locked and loaded, it feels almost like they have an insurmountable advantage because they just need to recast their commander once. And in Mizzix's case, you can remove them 3 or 4 times or her 3 or 4 times, but by the time you recast it, you have 12 experience counters. Your spells are going to cost so cheap that you paid a little extra to cast Mizzix isn't a huge deal.
Yeah. It's not very fun to sit down and start the game and just know, like, for every three or four things I try to do, maybe one gets through. One actually happens.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
Every card in your hand costs three cards in your hands.
And it is just also annoying, even if they're not counting your stuff, to every time you play something be like, does it happen?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, okay, all right. Well, this next thing, does it happen? And you just have to, like, that's just not... It's way worse than Rhystic Study, which is like, do you pay one? At least that is sort of a switch that you flip in your head. Either you're going to pay or you're not. But each thing, they have to then think about, like, what is that thing? What else you got on your board? What does everybody else have? Are you trying to bait out the counterspell? Like,
it's exhausting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think a lot of these decks actually, one of the main things that people, the reason that they're not great is that you do just have to spend more time, and the player playing them, you either have to just target them explicitly and get them out of the game, or you just have to let it happen. And that's not fun for anyone. All right, this next one is a favorite of mine because it's named after, I feel like it's named after one of our good friends, Alex Kessler. It's Kess, Dissident Mage, one blue, black, and a red for a 3/4 flying legendary creature human wizard. During each of your turns, you may cast an instant or a sorcery card from your graveyard. If a card cast this way would be put into your graveyard, exile it instead.
So Kess Storm specifically, I think, is a tough, and just Storm decks.
Decks, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Kess is, I think, one of the more prevalent Storm commanders. And Storm is very, very much similar to Korvald, Lord Windgrace, in that it's a solitaire type strategy. When they start to do the Storm thing, everybody else is kind of just watching.
Yeah. And the problem with Storm, ultimately, is that when they do cast the one spell that says Storm on it, you can't counter it. Because it replicates itself for every spell you've cast that turn.
I mean, there's Fluster Storm. And
that's like about it.
Fluster Squall or whatever. And yeah, there's a few that do it. But yes, you're right. Like, it's difficult.
Time stop.
Yeah. It's difficult to interact with Storm. But also, Storm is very complicated. Often, like, John Finkel, maybe the greatest Magic player of all time, and people like that will say that Storm is the hardest archetype to play because your sequencing has to be perfect. And you're often, you have to know when to pull the trigger based on your probability of drawing cards during going the storming off that is going to continue it. And so you can whiff too. So you can't just concede when it starts to happen. A lot of times they're storming off, but it's only 85% that it'll happen. It's not 100. So you got to sit there and wait and let them go. And sometimes they mess it up because there's a lot of decision points. Cast things slightly out of order can screw the whole thing up.
And if they don't get the thing, they go and go, well, pass turn. You're like, after all that?
Yeah. Well.
So, and they're wheeling too, so you're discarding your hand and redrawing. So there's lots of things that the Storm deck does. It's almost like a child in a, like, have you ever seen like those videos of those kids in the playpens and the toys just start spilling out everywhere? Someone has to clean it up, it is what it feels like. And sometimes you're like, oh, did the random Lego just hit me in the head? Like, what is happening? Ugh.
Yeah. All right. The next card, I think, was the card that was on the most people's list in-house as the one of the worst commanders to play against, and it's an oldie but a goodie. This used to be like arguably the most powerful deck in the format. Like I'd say 4 or 5 years ago, this was top tier deck back when the partial Paris.
Oh, partial. Yeah, totally.
So it's Narset Enlightened Master, 3 blue, red, and white. So 6 mana total for a 3/2 human monk, has first strike and hexproof. Hexproof is a big point of why this card is a pain to play against.
Yeah.
It says, whenever Narset attacks, exile the top 4 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may cast non-creature cards exiled with Narset this turn without paying their mana costs. So, cheating of mana costs, like we always say it, most powerful things you can do. Narset has Hexproof. Very, very specific spells only will get to her. Board wipes and things like that. If you don't have those and she gets one swing in, you probably lose the game because extra combat steps and extra turn spells are what the deck's going to have a lot of. But I think the worst part about it, similar to Storm, there's a possibility of whiffing. Sometimes they have
Scroll Rack, yeah.
And then they're in a much better position. But sometimes they don't. And it's like, okay, we're going to do this. Oh, they got an extra turn spell. They're going to swing again. We're going to do this. Oh, they got an extra turn spell. Oh, we're going to swing again. We're going to do this. Oh, did they? Oh, there's an extra combat.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's like, you got to sit there and watch it. And you literally just didn't draw a card that game, because maybe they got a Grim Monolith or something out, or a Basalt Monolith caster on turn 4, and you just didn't draw a card in the game that would have stopped this from happening because of the Hexproof.
Yeah, I think people really don't like extra turn spells. Mm-hmm. I've seen that in the comments. I've seen that just in general play pattern. That's one of the worst feel bads, and that's the way that Narset really works. It's not like, this is the turn I play it, and I swing with it, and then everything happens, and that's it. So I take another turn. I spin the wheel again. I do more deck manipulation. I'm really carefully placing spells on top in the specific, you know, making sure that these are there. And then there's just a lot of math that the Narset has to do. Yeah, that's the pose. If you can't see it, you're listening to it. Josh is just, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Yep. I don't dislike you. No. I think what you're doing is powerful, but I'm definitely not entertained.
Well, it's like, okay. And then what? All right.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to look at the top four. All right. Okay. Did you get? Yep. Okay. So we're going to do that again.
Yeah.
All right. It's just like,
where's the win?
Yeah.
Okay. The win? Expropriate. All right, everyone. You know what to vote for. All right. They have two more turns after this, so just, you know.
Okay. But they can still whiff, so we got to watch
it. Yeah, they can still whiff, yeah.
Should we concede? Well, they could whiff.
They
all
could
right.
whiff, yeah. And someone's just saying they're being like, this Path to Exile is the worst card in my deck. There's nothing I can do about this. You know what is good against Narset decks, though, is, and even like Mizzix decks, is Edict of Ex.
Yeah,
that's a great way to get around it. But again, you're not packing that kind of card in every single deck, especially if you're not playing the colors that have that kind of thing.
All right, we're to our last one. I was a little surprised. I didn't put this on my list, but a lot of people in house here did.
That's interesting because I would, you know, the reason I think Narset almost makes it off my list is because it's a 6-cost commander, so right. It takes a lot for players to get there, or they have to really build a rampy decks in there. And Locust God, which is our last card today, is also a 6-cost commander. It's 4 BR for a legendary creature god. It's a 4/4 with flying. Whenever you draw a card, create a 1/1 BR insect creature token with flying and haste. And of course, the Locust God has the activated ability of 2 BR to draw a card, then discard a card. And like the other legendary gods in this cycle, whenever Locust God dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. AKA commander tax, not a thing with this commander.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I do think it is pretty annoying and similar to Narset, is just hard to get rid of it. Like, at least with like Mizzix or like Moldrotha and certain commanders, if everybody's on the same page, you just remove it the first couple of times and it really slows down the deck.
Yeah.
Locust God, not as much because they just put it back in their hand and then...
You have to exile it pretty much.
Yeah. And I think Locust God plays out in a very similar fashion every game, which is a lot of wheel effects.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody wheels once or twice in a game, or the table does, it's not that bad because you get new cards, you get to see a new hand, blah, blah, blah. But when it's happening frequently all the time, it's not super fun because you can't formulate any plans.
You play Teferi's Puzzle Box in this deck, right?
Yep.
That is one of the least fun cards to play against.
Yeah, because you just can't plan ahead. And it's a strategy game, and what you want to do is be like, okay, I'm going to think about what I'm going to do and what I'm going to play this, then that, or they may react in this way and I'll have this as backup. And you just can't do any of that stuff if you're just going to have a new hand every single turn.
Not to mention the 1/1s have haste that the Locust God creates. And so it's very hard to attack into. Yep. It's very easy to get attacked by. So you're getting pecked down constantly. You're losing your hand. Everything is just going badly for your opponents if the Locust God deck is doing what it wants to do. It's no surprise that Kyle Hill has a Locust God deck.
He has a Narset deck, too. I don't know which of the other ones on the list.
You know what? If you have friends that play a lot of Commander, just count the ones that we talked today and see how many of them they've built in. You'll find out if they're that kind of player or not. You know what I mean? No, just kidding.
I do think the Locust God does have a little bit of the same, like, makes games longer, but it's more hidden with Locust God. But I think when you wheel a lot, when there's a lot of wheel effects, people are forced to then rethink about what they're going to do. So
right.
One of the things that saves time in a game of Commander is that I pass a turn to Jimmy, and as he's going, I can start to think about what I'm going to do with the cards in my hand.
Right, right.
You know, if certain scenarios come up or when, like, oh, if it gets back to my turn and I still have this or this, blah, 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 then I can do that. And if he plays something, I can do this. And you get your options ready so that you don't have to think when... there's no, like, actively watching me think time.
Yeah.
But if you wheel, well, okay, now I got to rethink everything. And there's 7 new cards and, you know...
I can tell you, there have been a lot of times where you get 7 new cards and you're like, hey, this is actually better. This is exciting. Okay, so I plan it out. Okay, they got that. Okay, this, this, and this. And it's like, wheel again. I'm like, okay, never mind. Let's just do it again. It's actually kind of mentally exhausting.
Yeah, there's actually a really big aspect of like, okay, I don't want to do what I just did again, which is waste my own time spending all that mental energy for like, oh, they're just going to wheel another
time. And then you just do this again. You just kind of sit there and go,
it just causes a natural sort of checking out, which I'm not saying is right, but it's just hard to fight against. That's just human nature a little bit.
Yeah, indeed.
All right. Well, speaking of what you said, before we wrap up here and go to the listeners, I had a question. How many of the commanders on our list have you had a deck built for at some point? Let me grab the paper back here so we can see the whole list.
I know for sure that Josh and I both have built Mizzix of Ismagnus' deck.
Yep, which we never play anymore.
I played it once, and then afterwards I was like, okay, that was enough.
For a long time, my Mizzix deck was undefeated. It did eventually get eclipsed by like newer commanders, but yeah. I'd played it like 7-8 times and never lost with it for a long time.
I've also built a Child of Alara deck, although it was a Planeswalker deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm currently actually building a Narset deck, but that's a different type of Narset.
Oh, okay. So you only have ever built two right now.
Two, seriously, yeah. And then Sand Triplets, I had a list brewed. And then again, after the Game Night's Holiday episode, I decided to...
I don't want
to
do that.
Hit the parachute button on that one.
Yeah, I've had Mizzix, Child of Alara, and I had a Derevi deck. I still have the Derevi deck. I never play it.
It's really powerful.
I pull it out against Kyle sometimes.
Kyle is quickly becoming the taste checker.
Well, I have to have like two or three really powerful decks just around nights when it's like, okay, he's going to be in the game.
Well, I know DJ has that kind of that kind of thing going.
And we do it on purpose. We say, okay, last game of the night, let's pull out our really powerful decks. And that's fine. I think, listen, I'm not, as always, we're not telling anyone how to play. I do think it's fun to play high powered.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say we're quite CEDH when we do that, but close to in those games.
Aspiring CEDH players.
But I don't want to do that every single game, so yeah. I've had three at some point out of 10, which, you know, maybe
let's see how many Craig has. Craig definitely has a Narset deck. I think he has a Tauren. Oh, definitely has a Tauren deck. I think he has a Mizzix deck. He definitely has a Child of Lara deck. He definitely has a Gaddock Teague deck. He definitely has a Grand Arbiter deck. He definitely has a Sand Triplets. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's built an Urza deck, too.
He's got eight, at least. Seven or eight.
Craig has a lot of decks, so it's not like it's like a 90% of his decks. Yeah,
and there's actually more than 10, because some of these groupings, like the stacks, there's four commanders there. And so, all right.
Okay.
Right. To the listeners, what do you out there think are the worst commanders to play against? Are there any that we missed, or are there any commanders we did talk about but you disagree? You actually think they're fun to play against?
There's a better way to build it, or a way that you think is actually more fun. Please let us know.
Yeah, if you do find that, you know, hey, there's a fun way to build this commander, you know, let us know, and then maybe other people want to pick up that card. And the best way to pick up cards is by going to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you want to buy any Magic product, any singles, any pre-orders of maybe a Koria main set or Commander product.
On the way.
Anything at all. Any Magic product at all. If you just use our affiliate link when you buy it, because you're going to buy that stuff anyway, you're simultaneously supporting Game Nights, our podcast, all of our content. We really appreciate everybody that does that.
And not to mention, when you get to play those amazing cards, don't forget that the majority of the time you see those cards, they're upside down. They're in your deck, so make sure you put them in a sick sleeve. Ultra Pro, the other sponsor of the show, they will do the best at protecting your cards. They've been literally doing it for the longest in the industry. They are the benchmark, right? And you're going to want to go to someone that you can trust. So the next time you're out at your big box retailer or your LGS or at cardkingdom.com/commandzone, pick up some Ultra Pro products. I, of course, as always, highly recommend the Satin Tower deck boxes. I've been using them for years now. I put my draft sets in there when I go drafting. I also put commander decks in there, and they have a place to store dice. They're super convenient, really compact, and a great way to just bring a single deck to place as well.
Yeah, that's the highest praise we can really give to a company that does what Ultra Pro does, is that we personally trust them with our stuff. All right, now it's time for the end step.
We talk about
something cool outside the world of Magic. We have maybe the coolest end step of all time. For
we
sure.
Did it. So this last,
It was Monday.
Yeah, it was Monday. So this last week, when this episode was coming out, the week before this,
the 9th of March.
The 9th of March, the Ides of March. Is that the Ides of March?
I should know this because I'm a theater major.
Who knows? The Mulan world premiere happened here in Los Angeles, and I was able to get Josh and his girlfriend tickets to come attend and walk the red carpet, dress up, look awesome, meet the stars of the film, get a picture with the stars of the film, and watch the movie, of course, at the Dolby Theater, which is where they hold the Oscars every year here in Los Angeles.
I like how you framed that. It was awesome that you let my girlfriend and I tag along, but that's not the cool part about this. That's not even close to the cool part about this. Like that, yes. The cool part about this is Jimmy is a big part in the movie. Jimmy, you walked the red carpet.
I did.
I walked behind the part where they're like, hey, yes, you're going into the theater here, but we're going to have you walk behind this thing so nobody sees you. Jimmy walked on the other side where all the press was.
Yep.
So like Variety and Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah,
and
ABC.
And everything.
Guys,
everybody's there. It's a major Hollywood motion picture, hundreds of millions of dollar budget. Jimmy's walking the red carpet, doing interviews.
Yeah, we went all out. I got a stylist. I got a groomer, rented a suit and all that stuff.
You look sharp.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And it was really overwhelming. I didn't think it was going to be as much of a blur as it was. Before I went, I was like, all right, this is what's going to happen. These are the kinds of things I'm going to do. I'm going to do this there. I'm going to do an Instagram story here. None of that happened because
he's
I was
just like, ah!
Yeah, literally. And then you have someone shuffling you around, be like, hey, they want to talk to you. You're like, okay, go up. And then they ask, you know, anywhere from very benign questions to very serious ones, and you have to be ready to deliver. And I didn't realize this, but I was like, of course they're gonna post it almost immediately after you say it. So I can understand why there are those like flubs on the red carpet, because I don't even remember speaking half the things I said half the time.
Because it's one of those things where like, Jimmy, and there's all these people trying to get your attention. You know Jimmy made it because he had handlers.
Yeah.
People were like, Jimmy, no, you gotta move along now. You can't, yeah. Like, because I was like, Jimmy, like, I was on the other side, and he came over and gave me a hug, and they're like, sorry, Jimmy's got to go over here now. And then, like, they're, like, literally physically, like, yeah, pushing him to here, turn you there. Like,
and then you feel like a farm animal, to be honest, because there's a whole line of photographers in the beginning, and they're all from all different outlets, and they want to get a picture that they can use where you're looking into their camera. So what ends up happening is they all yell your name. They're like, Jimmy, and over like, here, over here, give me a smile. And you're like, what? What do you mean, give you a smile? I'm going to smile if I want to. And they're like, tilt your head down. I'm like, okay. So you just kind of do what they say, and you're like, oh gosh, I should have practiced more poses. And so there are a couple of pictures of me out there, like kind of like just arms like this, like, ah!
Well,
but
one thing
very overwhelming, very fun.
One thing I'll say also is the red carpet interviews, like you said, they immediately post it. And it was like, you know, 5 minutes later that my entire Twitter feed and Facebook is just Jimmy clips on the red carpet. Like, listen, you got tweeted out by Variety. They got like 3 million Twitter followers or whatever. Yeah. By Disney itself was tweeting out.
Disney had it. Disney D23, which is their fan group and inside Disney. Yeah, there was so... And then
all these news outlets were basically like posting your clips, your snippets, your red carpet interview stuff.
Yeah, it felt really validating actually, because in the movie itself, I am not... It's Mulan. I'm not Mulan. I'm not Mulan's father. I am I would call it a side character, because we're in the army. We're in a lot of the movie, but we're not there to chew up screen time. We're there to support the main story and the actor. And so when you get to see, you know, all these things being posted later, they're not going to post the ones that they're definitely going to post are interviews with the main cast, with the big Chinese stars like Donnie Yen and Jet Li, and like Ming-Na Wen, who was there as well, and Christina Aguilera. And then getting to see that they also decided to post my clips felt really validating, because I was like, oh, cool, I gave a good enough answer. I talked eloquently enough that they thought that this was worth sharing online as well.
Yeah, it was sweet. They thought a lot of your stuff was worth sharing, because there was a lot out there, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of obviously like very discussion-based things to talk about this time of year, because, you know, people are getting sick, and there's a whole number of things happening around the world, so I guess I was called upon to talk about them.
And speaking of which, a lot going on in the world, obviously, yeah, that's a good segue, I think, into... So we did the premiere, we went to the premiere, but unfortunately, they've just announced that Mulan is going to be delayed.
Yep, like a lot of other movies as well that are coming out in the next couple of months, the coronavirus and a lot of the quarantining that people have been advising, a lot of the companies have decided that it's time to move the premiere date, which I am, by the way, 100% fine with. Very important to stay safe right now, and large gatherings such as movie theaters or events and stuff could pose a danger to the health of the people that want to watch this movie. So we're not actually sure when the release date is yet, but I still encourage everyone to look forward to it. I know when it does finally come, it's going to be really, really great. And we can all go see it in a safe environment as well.
Yeah, and we didn't have a chance to get into it, and we probably won't go over it a lot here because we're going to talk about it again when it actually is coming out. But it's a very good movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think so.
Yeah. No, I mean, no joke. Like, I teared up a little at a couple different points. My girlfriend, Elle, she was crying at the end. And you know that's a movie that connects with you when people are having that kind of emotional response. So look forward to it. It is coming out. We wish it was coming out in a couple of weeks like it's supposed to. But yeah, again, like you said, I think this is just bad timing for that kind of thing. It's better for everybody if it comes out in like 6 months or whatever it's going to be, because yeah, when it's a lot safer. And obviously, also the movie will do better at that point. And we want the movie to do well, because that means a lot for Jimmy and his career and things like that. So
indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely looking forward to whenever they do announce it. And, you know, on Twitter, we'll talk about all that stuff as well. But until then, you get to know that the movie is good.
Yeah.
It's just this is an earlier sneak peek than we thought it would be now.
And maybe they'll do like a second premiere that we could go to, because it was so fun the first time. I'd love to go again. Why not?
Redux. Why not? Let's roll it around. Let's do it again.
All right. Special thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team. So we've got Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Alfred Estaca, and Sam Waldo. They are all the people working on our show. And also, they're the people that are doing the post-production now for the EDH RecCast show.
So good.
Yeah, we mentioned that at the beginning of the episode. We'll mention it again here. Make sure to check out EDH RecCast. They're a podcast that talks about the Commander format, but they do it through the lens of statistics and data analytics that come from the EDH Rec website, which is, I mean, straight up the most used website for brewing decks for Commander.
It's my go-to.
Yeah, and they've been one of my favorite podcasts about Commander for a long time, so it's great to get to work with them. So go find them. Just type EDH Rec Cast into your search bar. Hit that subscribe button. You should probably hit that subscribe button for us, too. We never say that, but, you know, subscribe to the Command Zone as well.
Yeah, subscribe to all of us. That's way you do not miss any of the content that we post or any of the awesome giveaways that we do as well. All right, everyone. And of course, as always, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who makes the living card animations that start and end our show at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast, as well as on Game Nights and live behind us here on set for the Command Zone Podcast. All right, that's it, everybody. Please stay safe, be healthy, and we will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.